first rule of the Cinema Talk Podcast is that no one listens to the Cinema Talk Podcast. The second rule of the Cinema Talk Podcast is that no one listens to the Cinema Talk Podcast.
Today we're talking about Fight Club, starring Edward Norton, Brad Pitt, Helena Bonham Carter, Meatloaf, Jared Leto, and Holt McCallany, directed by David Fincher. I am Ryan.
I'm Tyler Durden.
No, I'm Brendan.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Logan.
And welcome back to week three of our David Fincher series, where we hit one of the biggest movies of all time, I would say, Fight Club. One of the most discussed movies of all time, probably. So very exciting episode. And guys, you want to give your background with Fight Club to the listeners?
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I didn't know what this movie was about. Just from the aspect of, like, everyone always got so hard over this movie and they were like, oh, Fight Club, bro, you're gonna love it. And I looked at the poster and it's a bar of soap, with the words Fight Club on it. And I was like, is it just dudes beating each other up in the shower? I didn't know what it was about.
That'd be a different kind of movie.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was just going to be about dudes that just like really liked punching each other. I was not expecting all of the interesting commentary and psychological aspects of this movie. But we'll get into that.
Yeah, I knew a decent amount about this movie. As I said in last week's podcast, I knew the ending, and I had a pretty good idea of the twist. You know, that last shot is very iconic with the Pixies song, so I had seen that before. And I had, like, read some stuff about it. I knew that it was very influential, but it was always one that was on my list that I always wanted to see, but I just never got around to. I remember there was this one security guard at college that I would talk to sometimes about movies, and we were just like, oh, I like movies. And he was always like, have you seen Fight Club? And I was like, no, I haven't. And then he would like immediately like be like, you have to watch Fight Club. This is the movie. You can't like movies and not watch Fight Club. And I was like, okay, I'm sorry, I will. So now I have. So enlightened.
So now you can officially say that you like movies.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I had no experience with this movie. I had never seen it. Obviously, everyone knows, you know, the first rule of Fight Club and that whole deal. But yeah, I mean, the parts that have stuck around in pop culture are certainly very different from, you know, the parts that on the whole, I think, make the movie what it is. So yeah, that'll be an interesting conversation. But yeah, I didn't know the twist. And yeah, you know, like most Fincher movies, had never seen this one.
Yeah, I came into this movie or into this podcast before rewatching it, having this as my third favorite Fincher movie. And I mean, I've seen this movie a couple times. I own it on Blu-ray. I like it a lot. I think I saw it for the first time back in high school. And this has probably been my third or fourth viewing. So I'm excited to get into it and talk about it. Is there anything else before we get into full spoilers in this podcast?
Big spoilers
to talk about. Alrighty, let's do this plot summary via IMDb. Always gotta cite our sources.
Always.
A nameless first-person narrator, played by Edward Norton, attends support groups in an attempt to subdue his emotional state and relieve his insomniatic state. When he meets Marla, played by Helena Bonham Carter, another fake attendee of support groups, his life seems to become a little more bearable. However, when he associates himself with Tyler Durden, played by Brad Pitt, he is dragged into an underground fight club and soap-making scheme. Together, the two men spiral out of control and engage in competitive rivalry for love and power. When the narrator is exposed to the hidden agenda of Tyler's fight club, he must accept the awful truth that Tyler may not be who he says he is. And of course, if you've seen Fight Club, you know that who he says he is actually the narrator. There's a spoiler. They're the same person. So, guys, where do you want to start with this discussion? And do we want to wait to get to the twist, or do you want to just dive right into the twist?
I say we dive right in, because, it is pretty big throughout the whole movie, especially once you go back and start thinking about the beginning scenes.
It's definitely
fair
an
enough.
Interesting
Real quick, I just want to know, real quick, just before we get to this, the huge discussion about the identity of the narrator, what were your guys' just initial thoughts on Fight Club?
I mean, yeah, initial thoughts. I was curious as to why this movie was as popular as it was, and it hit me that this movie is definitely misconstrued in the message it's trying to send, and obviously, like, you know, the things that it's trying to say about toxic masculinity are always taken the wrong way. But I think that if you kind of push aside the Fight Club fanboy culture and like why like douchebags like Tyler Durden and things like that, you get to this really interesting commentary on like consumerism and the American dream. And I think that I'm sure we'll talk about it more, but like also this interesting discussion on mental health. I believe it's dissociative identity disorder is what the narrator suffers from. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. I really think that if you can kind of push aside what all of the like Fight Club fanboys are trying to sell you on it, there is actually a really solid and interesting like psychological movie in there.
Yeah, I thought this was a great movie. I know Floyd was unsure as to where my thoughts on this movie would lie, but I thought this was fantastic. Even knowing where the ending was kind of going, even having a vague idea of the twist, still thoroughly engrossed. I mean, like all of Fincher's movies, I am just astounded at how he manages to juggle so much going on with just an amazing frenetic pace that never leaves me unfocused. So I was totally into this movie. Like Brendan, yeah, I do think it is interesting how people really do misunderstand this movie. And yeah, I mean, I you know, if you kind of take the if you watch this movie with a different mindset and you don't like look too much deeper into what it's trying to say, you'd be like, yeah, violence, action, guys beating guys up, it's awesome. But it's like, no, it's just making fun about how frail all of you are, which I think is really interesting. And I think Fincher always brings some interesting themes to the table. I love the narration in this movie. I would love to read the source material by Chuck Palahniuk, I think it is, of yes, which this is based on, so because cool. I mean, especially the beginning of this movie when he's going to the support groups, very much so like a book, you know, I'm assuming much of the narration was taken directly from the novel. Really, really enjoyed this one. Super excited to get into it because I literally just finished this movie 10 minutes ago. So these are just going to be raw, unfiltered thoughts.
Yeah, to reference the Cinema Talk Movie Journal's Best of the Decade episodes, Floyd, I know you were talking about The Wolf of Wall Street and how it's totally misconstrued in today's, you know, by the masses, basically, of, you know, all that most people really see when they watch that film is the sex and the drugs and the basically the fun part of the rich lifestyle.
The
and,
excess, yeah.
And they're not, right, the yeah, definitely the excess, and I think this plays into that a lot, but they miss the point of sort of the real messaging of the movie, which is, you know, when it all gets stripped away, there are real consequences for that. And I definitely think that it's definitely afflicted by the same sort of thing where, you know, in the popular culture, what has remained of this movie, what is so ubiquitous about it is the very over the top of fight sequences that are just very like almost a little too violent at times, I would argue. But that just like that's what people remember. And they don't really think about, you know, the psychological stuff or even like the class and the consumerist commentary here. But yeah, I'm going to be honest. I'm not an enormous fan of this movie. I think I might be the Fight Club naysayer on this episode. And it's hard for me to say exactly why. I think part of it is that, you know, I like the twist. I think it's a very cool twist, but for the rest of the movie, I wouldn't say that I was very engaged for that to make an impact. You know, I think a really good twist can, elevate or, you know, just, it takes an already good film to a new level, which is, and to me, the twist was sort of like saving it from what I thought was like kind of boring and disjointed in some ways. And yeah, so I don't know. I'll be interested to talk about it. Maybe I'll come around on it a little more. But yeah, there are things I like. But on the whole, this one just it's not one that really like got me. And I don't think I really got it fully. So yeah.
Yeah, I this viewing was weird for me because I didn't like this movie this time, which was weird because I had this down as my third favorite Fincher movie. I had it down as 4.5 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd, and I hadn't seen it for a couple of years. But I rewatched it, and while I was watching it, I was like, this just doesn't work for me anymore. And I'm going to be interested to like talk through this again, like I did with The Game, which I feel like I can be convinced again that I like this movie. And that this is a good movie, but when I turned it off, I think what we'll get into, I think the reason that it didn't work this time is because the toxic masculinity that I feel like it was critiquing felt a little too indulgent this time. Which is weird to talk to pair this with Wolf of Wall Street. I feel like the hammer at the end of the movie wasn't nearly as impactful in terms of condemning all the rest of the movie the way that the Wolf of Wall Street does. I feel like there wasn't that moment where I was like, look at how pathetic these people are. I don't think I think Fincher might feel that way, but I feel like he didn't quite portray that in the way that he needed to for the, and I think unlike Scorsese, where the first 2 hours of The Wolf of Wall Street are just so bonkers that no matter what, people are just going to latch onto those first 2 hours and not think about the last hour here. And again, I could be convinced otherwise if I'm given concrete examples by Matt and Brendan. For me, the ending wasn't that kind of huge rebuttal of the first, you know, 2 hours of this movie. The last 20, 30 minutes of this movie wasn't enough of a rebuttal of the first 2 hours of this movie for me to think that, like, okay, you know what, I had those problems while I was watching it, but thinking back on it, it was the right decision. I think this movie is expertly acted. I think Brad Pitt is fantastic once again in another Fincher movie. I think Edward Norton and Helena Bonham Carter are fantastic. The visual style is amazing. I think the direction in terms of visuals is fantastic. I don't know if, once again, I feel like Fincher, I think it's once again the script maybe that I didn't quite enjoy on this viewing, because it didn't feel like it was as impactful of an ending as Wolf of Wall Street. So I don't know what Matt and Brendan, or if Logan, you agreed with that.
Yeah, I definitely see what you mean there. And I felt that, you know, it's interesting that we talked about the author of the book a little bit, because if you watch or listen to interviews of him, the way that he talks about the story is that, like, it's talking about, like, the male perspective that, like, doesn't get talked about. And it feels very much like male stories, like, never get told. And, like, this is something that needs to, like, these are stories that we need to tell of the male experience. It's very much like,
ew,
that doesn't need to, that's not a thing. Like, that's, we don't need more male stories. That's not really the point. So, yeah, I feel like even that, like, knowing that context of the author, it sort of rubs me the wrong way even more. And, you know, it was also something that we brought up in Seven, where, you know, it seems like Fincher is condemning this, but it feels like he could go into condemning it a little bit more. It feels like he's not really... I couldn't figure out what this movie was trying to say by the end.
I agree.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that, like, this, the author of the book kind of has this, like, weird take on, like, male stories. I think one thing that the movie at least does really well is, you know, really presenting the idea of toxic masculinity. And I think that's what also a lot of people get lost in with this movie, which I think is, you know, I think it is saying some really good things. I think that the movie is saying, like, hey, this is what happens in, like, a society that is so dominated with toxic masculinity that they form an army and kind of live with no rules. But at the same time, I feel like this character of Tyler Durden is, like, he's too cool, almost. Like, they make him too much of, like, this, like, I don't know, this, like, interesting guy, this, like, agent of chaos kind of figure, where he's, like, he's not really, he's no longer embodying the toxic masculinity, but rather, you know, what I think the movie is, like, setting out to do is, like, this embodiment of saying, like, fuck the American dream, like, there is, like, it, the dream was a lie, like, nothing is real, that kind of thing. There is a really, really good quote about from an article I was reading by Rebecca Renner, where she says, Fight Club fanboys want power, silent women, and, wait for it, the American dream just by another name. In other words, they're a bunch of rule followers trying to remake the world in the way that they've always been told it should be. And I think that's really interesting, because that's not what this movie's saying, but there are definitely some times where, like, if you're not looking for the message that, like, this is wrong, that's what you're getting from it, you know?
Yeah, for me, Floyd, I know that you were saying that, unlike Wolf of Wall Street, there's no the hammer is brought down and the veil is torn away. And
I wouldn't say there's none. I just didn't think it was enough.
Sure, you don't think there's enough. For me, the entire movie is recognizing that this group of men are pathetic. Like, there was no, I guess the twist at the end was a sort of hammer moment. But for me, the entire movie, I feel like Fincher was telling me, like, yeah, these guys are pathetic. They think they're trying to build some sort of army to be able to, you know, they're fighting to be able to express their masculinity in a world that doesn't let them. So I felt like the entire movie was aware of that. I mean, in the very beginning, even when he first meets Tyler and they're fighting each other, or he's fighting himself in the parking lot. I mean, the scenes are laughable. Even where the testicular cancer scene, where, I mean, it's just a bunch of men who are like crying and hugging each other, and it's funny, and he's making fun of them. And then when they're shaving their heads, everything was so over the top and very it was very excessive, I guess, but I didn't find it to be too overindulgent. I felt like every single part of this movie was like, yes, recognize this is over the top, and pointedly so.
I think the moment that it lost me, when the movie ended, with what you're saying, Matt, I think why I disagree with what you're saying in terms of it saying, like, look at how pathetic these guys are all the way through. They think they can build this army and do all this stuff. They do it by the end, though. They succeed. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's why it rubs me even further the wrong way. Like, if the end of this movie was all of them, if it was the narrator overcoming Tyler and then getting the bombs to stop, or, like, using his power over the space monkeys to be able to stop the bombing, I think that would have been maybe more of saying, like, look at these pathetic people, you know, they couldn't even follow through with what they had planned, you know, it was in the bag. But instead it's like, oh no, they actually do cripple all of the finances of the world.
Well, that's what I think is so effective about it, that it's like, yes, some people are actually, you know, can actually carry through with these ideas. Like, there are some people who are this toxic. So I think that's effective. And for me, the ending, when the bombs are going off and he's not able to stop this destruction from happening, is, okay, what now? You achieved your goal. You blew everything up. You're with the girl, right? You have a hole in the side of your cheek. What now? What do you do now? Like, that's for me what the ending was, which was really powerful. So if them accomplishing their plan isn't a problem, that's kind of scary for me. And I think Fincher's saying that, like, yeah, I mean, and their ideologies are very pathetic, but the way they go about it, they're effective at it. And it's terrifying that this could actually happen.
First of all, how funny is it that the big plot at the end is to blow up like 5 credit card buildings in one city, so that all of the world's credit is entirely reset and everyone can be free.
And again, an unnamed city, which I'm gonna guess is New York in this movie. It feels like New York.
Yeah, it's just like that as like the big thing that's supposed to happen at the end. That doesn't really make sense. But to jump back to who they're trying to paint as pathetic, I very much felt like I feel like a movie today would take those scenes of vulnerability and, more like male sensitivity rather than toxic masculinity. It would take those scenes in the support groups, and it would say, you know, this is what's right. This is sort of how you're supposed to deal with things. You're supposed to talk about things. You're supposed to feel things. And instead I felt like all those things were very much played for comedy. And then it was like, when they get to the fight club, it's like, yeah, this is how men deal with their problems. They just punch each other. And then at what point in the movie do they realize that that's not right? I don't think there's ever a moment of reckoning where they're like, oh,
that's my point. Yeah.
Maybe Fight Club was a bad idea. Yeah. So like, I think there's really
maybe
no,
Fight Club is not a good idea.
Maybe it's not a good idea. And it's obviously not, because Jared Leto almost fucking dies at one point. So like, I guess I just don't understand where's the moral turnaround for these characters? Where are we supposed to, you know, where's the thesis of this movie really headed?
See, that's the thing. None of the space monkeys ever realize. They're so embroiled in this ideology. They're so entrenched in it that at the end, Edward Norton, I think, kind of comes to realize, oh, like, what the fuck have I done? I'm blowing shit up. I'm going to die. I think that's the moment. That's kind of the turnaround for his character. But I think what is so effective is that these other guys, these other goons, they never have a turnaround. They're just following the leader. I mean, all the countless scenes where he goes into restaurants and they all kind of nod in approval. They're saying, yes, sir. I mean, it's just poking fun at every single one of them. They're nameless goons. And then the entire scene where they begin to repeat Bob's name I think it's funny, like, at how he's poking fun at them. I think
his name is Meatloaf.
Yeah, his name was Meatloaf. I think that kind of going
along... Meat space loaf.
I think it's interesting, and I don't know if this is supposed to be, like, a real thing, or if it's supposed to be kind of, like, you know, just this, like, psychological nod to us, but the fact that every single place that the narrator goes, is, like, has someone in it, I think is, like... To me, it seemed almost like, you know, Fincher or the writer saying, like, look, like, the toxic masculinity is in every single person that you run into. Like, it is widespread throughout America. Like, it is not just confined to this one fight club in this nameless city, wherever it is. Like, it is spread throughout the country. Like, he can fly to Maine or whatever and, like, go to a hotel or, like, a random bar, and the dudes know him there because they're all connected by this common thread of this toxic masculinity that is so pervasive in our society, which I think is really interesting if you kind of look at it that way.
I understand all of the things that this movie is going for. I just feel like on this viewing, it didn't work for me. And I think one of the problems, too, is that we haven't really talked... I'm surprised we haven't really talked about the twist a lot, because I feel like a lot of the things with the twist, looking back on it and repeat viewings now, the twist doesn't really matter in the plot of the movie, ultimately. I think what the problem is, like, all of my problems with, like, the talk... Like, it not being... enough at the end is kind of devoid of Tyler as a character, because, like, the narrator gets out of responsibility with the film, I think, even though him and Tyler are the same person, even though he is Tyler. I feel like the film doesn't grapple with the fact that, you know, even though Tyler, because Brad Pitt is on screen the entirety of the time with the narrator, in terms of, like, even after it's found out that Tyler is fake, he is still there. I think the problem with that is that we never see Edward Norton be Tyler. I think that's the problem.
Yeah, we never get that,
very little, if any. Yeah. We don't really get to grapple with the fact that Edward Norton is Tyler, if you know what I'm saying. Like, we know because the twist is like, oh, they're the same person, but we don't get to see it. And we don't get to see change with Edward Norton's character, I don't think. I don't think we actually see developed growth with the narrator. I think he is this normal guy who's just, you know, the IKEA guy with a condo. We find out he gets a split personality because of it. He blows up his apartment. He goes to live and probably squat in this, like, abandoned house, starts a fight club, starts a terrorist organization, figures out that he's the same person, puts a gun in his mouth, and is like, oh, you know what? I actually don't want to do all this blowy up stuff, even though he didn't. I think the problem also with, and this is me just working through it, sorry, that's a little stream of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Also because he never fully bought into the space monkeys. Like, he as soon as they started, they were like, oh, what the fuck's this? This isn't soap. He was out immediately. Like, he didn't want to be a part of it ever. And I think that really devoids any lesson at the end, because Tyler was the only person that ever wanted to go in on the bombs. And then the narrator, devoid of Tyler, never actually wanted to go through with it. When he is able to defeat Tyler in his own brain, he doesn't have to grapple with anything that he did, really.
Nope.
So how does he blow up his own apartment? Because Brad Pitt's Tyler knew how to make bombs out of soap, but
with the gas, and that the pilot light was still turned on and when he left.
Yeah, it was just like it was a ticking time bomb, basically.
So he knew that it was going to happen, but somehow... Okay, yeah. So this is my first time watching through the movie, but I had some scenes where I'm not really sure if they make sense with the twist, and I don't know, but let's talk about it.
I think it does. I think I was watching for it this time. I think there are so many clues in this movie that they're the same person.
I agree that there are clues, but I also think that there are things that really only make sense if it's two people, and I could be wrong, but... the scene where they're both selling soap to a woman, and we get that really awesome voiceover quote about selling people's fat back to them, mm-hmm. Which is a cool quote. Gross. If I had to take, like, the thesis of this movie, that would probably be it. But, like, they're both interacting with someone there. Is this, like, the woman buying it only seeing one of them?
I assume so.
And well, we see the Edward Norton character doesn't talk to anyone.
So when they steal the fat from the liposuction clinic, they're like helping each other over the fence and they're like handing the bag to each other. How does he get over there without the help of another person or like do any of it?
Maybe that's just how he sees it in his mind. I don't really.
Yeah, I don't think that's that big of a deal.
We see like the parking lot scene where it's their first fight and we see him fighting himself later, which is really funny, by the way. Like, if you imagine you're like some dudes, you're like a group of like macho drunk dudes, you're coming out of a bar and you see this dude fighting himself in a parking lot and you're like, let's follow him to a basement and fight each other.
Yeah.
Because we saw someone fighting himself. But
yeah,
also, the scene behind the convenience store when they're about to kill the guy, and they're like, they're both talking. What is that guy hearing? What is the victim hearing?
A crazy dude talking to himself, I assume.
It's so wild.
So let's get into this. So because towards the end of the movie, we find out when the twist happens, right? Edward Norton says, the narrator says, you know, have I been sleeping? Have I been awake longer? And in the beginning of the movie, we get these dark screens, like, in between different scenes. And as the movie progresses, like, the length of those dark screens are on screen, like, goes a little bit longer. Like, he is becoming more and more Tyler. So it is, and it's like, you know, when the screen goes dark, then he's Tyler. Then when it comes back, he's acting as the narrator. So is the entire movie then, I guess with the exception to the beginning, once he becomes Tyler and takes on the split personality, is the entire movie then him sleeping? Because at the end, Brad Pitt says, like, you would imagine seeing yourself, you would imagine, like, me seeing it, like, from a third-person perspective. So then is the entire movie just him sleeping, thinking about the times that he was Tyler, and, like, positioning himself in those scenes?
I think
if you get what I'm getting at?
I think that
possibly.
Because he's talking about his insomnia, and he says that when you're an insomniac, you are never, like, you're never asleep, and you're never awake. So I think that the times that, like, he is Tyler, he's, like, not actually, he's only like half conscious for that. Like the times that he's like with Tyler and doing things, like he's more conscious for that, where he can kind of like see this, like, you know, I don't know. Tyler refers to himself as an imaginary friend, but there's probably a better medical term for that. I also used the word crazy earlier, and that was probably not the right term to use there. You know, but just like for a mentally ill person to be dealing with these things, whether it's, I mean, it's, you know, Hollywood twists around a lot of mental illnesses to fit their kind of story arcs, whatever this may be. But he's like, I assume that the times when he's like not really conscious of it, but he is still suffering from insomnia is when like he's just Tyler doing Tyler things. Like when he's having sex with Marla, and that's like just Tyler having sex with Marla, then like he's not really there. Like he's not like conscious of that. I would be interested to like know exactly, because like I read that it was dissociative identity disorder that he suffers from somewhere, but I don't think it was ever like confirmed. I would be interested to know if this is like based on any like real life experiences that the author knew about, or if this was just him kind of like inventing a mental illness to like suit his narrative.
Yeah. So there are things that Tyler does, Brad Pitt's Tyler, that Edward Norton's Tyler doesn't know about. Right. It's like, and that's like, he doesn't remember them. He's not conscious as the narrator. And so then he doesn't remember it later. But like, I think part of that is that we don't have a good sense of how much time this story takes or how much time passes between certain scenes. Because I think if we did, we would be able to, we would be able to figure out like, okay, well, Edward Norton didn't do anything for like 3 days and we just saw Brad Pitt doing stuff for like those 3 days. And like, they never, so I think.
If we did it like that, then the audience would know the twist more in the beginning of the movie. I mean, you have to keep the pace breakneck in order
for
it to be seamless.
I think they do it
smartly with the black screens that are interspersed throughout different scenes and how they get longer each time. Like, Tyler is taking over more and more of his persona.
Yeah, this is what I don't like about the twist, though. And normally, I like twists when it elevates a good movie to a great movie, or, you know, it elevates an interesting story and then just takes it into a different direction. But I think the only reason the twist works is that we have to have the beginning be, like, kind of nondescript in some ways. Like, it's obviously, it's necessary. Okay, so we have the unnamed city, which worked in Seven for reasons that we discussed there. I don't really know that it has an effect here. It just sort of is. It just sort of doesn't try to name it.
I don't think it really matters. Yeah.
We don't have a sense of time, because, you know, because then it would give it away that he's actually two people. But, you know, it's actually weird. I have no idea. You could tell me that this story takes place over, like, a year or over, like, a week. And I guess it is. It's more than a week because they get into, like,
I was going to say, they stand on that porch for 3 days.
Right.
Per person. So it's at least a year, I think, at least.
It's really strange, though. But then, we also don't have a name for the character, and we don't have a strong identity for the main character, which, obviously, you can't have that if you want to have the twist later. But, like, I feel like those three things mean that the movie can't be that effective until the twist. And the twist happens, like, maybe a half hour from the end. And I just felt like I wasn't in it at all until the twist. And then I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty interesting. But, like, there was nothing really grounding me in the story before that that one interesting thing happened.
Damn.
You weren't interested by any of the other, just, like, the dynamic between Edward Norton or Brad Pitt or, like, any of the things that they were, like, doing. I thought, like, and that was part of my thing with, I meant to let you answer there, but I just wanted to preface that, when I said, like, I think Tyler Durden is too cool for them to really get their point across, I think, like, in those scenes where, like, it's just Edward Norton and Brad Pitt kind of doing their own thing, I really like their kind of banter and their relationship.
They have great chemistry.
Yeah, they have really great chemistry on screen. And I like the things that Edward Norton does. And I like learning about all the things that Tyler does, despite the twist at the end. None of that caught your attention, though?
I mean, a little bit. I just didn't really... Mostly, I didn't really like any of the characters.
Okay.
Edward Norton is an interesting character. We gain sympathy for him at the beginning when we hear about, you know, his insomnia and this whatever kind of strange complex it is that makes him, you know, go to different grief clinics for, you know, things that or like whatever support groups.
Which is a great idea. I love that. I think that's
it's a very interesting idea. But yeah, I mean, like. The character of Tyler sucks. Like, we're supposed to hate him the entire time, I feel like. And, like, Marla sucks. And she's doing the exact same thing as the narrator is doing. So, like, I feel like we're kind of also supposed to think that he sucks. I don't know. It's just nothing really ever drew me in. And the plot, you know, I didn't think that the Fight Club itself was that interesting. Although, you know. Yes, there is some appeal there. But then once it gets to Project Mayhem, it seems like that is very... It's a very sudden change. And, like, I don't know how anyone found out about it. I don't know. There's a lot of... This is also a very stream of consciousness observation here. But, yeah, no, to be perfectly honest, I didn't feel like I had any sense of stakes in the story.
See... The unclear passage of time, just the in and out flow of this entire movie, I found to be so engrossing. I mean, there's like that whole like 5-minute montage of when the narrator is searching for Tyler and he's going airport to airport. And he's like, I don't know how long I've been here. And we just have no sense of where is he, how long. And it's just a complete flow. And I think Fincher is so just a master of pacing. I mean, I maybe it's a agree to disagree thing, but I just felt so engrossed in this movie. I thought the character of Marla was super interesting. I thought Helen Bonham Carter was brilliant in this movie. Just like she's great in everything, but she was amazing in this movie. Edward Norton's character is interesting because they make you sympathize with him a bit, right? It's like they're appealing to like, he's a victim of capitalism. He's downtrodden in his job. But then he's just a pathetic character when, I guess, he's getting mad at himself. And then when he hears them having sex and he's freaking out, he's like, I'm not bad. I'm fine about it. And it's just like, he's just some, you know, frail dude who's getting mad over himself having sex with Marla. It gets all wonky, but I thought it was so interesting. And the way it transitions into Project Mayhem, it's just, I love how seamless that is and how it happens without us even noticing, because he feels like that's just Tyler doing it. He feels so detached from it when himself is just pulling all the strings.
Matt, I don't know if you felt this way, but this very much reads to me like an Alan Moore kind of story, like V for Vendetta or Watchmen or something along those lines. Because I honestly thought, like, when it started going into Operation Mayhem, that I was going to think it was kind of hokey and, like, just like, oh, they're giant pranksters now. But I actually, like, I didn't feel that way at all. And I thought it was going to feel dumb to me when they first introduced the concept, but I was actually like, why? I'm accepting this. I don't know why, but it very much felt to me like, you know, as things sort of, got like worse and like, you know, things started like ramping up towards the end. It was very much like, you know, we talked about V for Vendetta on the show before, but like end of V for Vendetta, where like, you're not really sure, like, oh, it's going for this massive destructive thing, or the end of Watchmen, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point.
Yeah. I mean, they literally, kind of carved that smiley face into the building, which is very exactly. Watchmen reminiscent. Yeah. No, I agree with you. And yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I get what you guys are saying in terms of all of this. It just, for me, it didn't... I agree the pacing is really good. I think the pacing is fantastic. I do love little bits of the beginning with clues of Tyler and kind of how things tie back around. You know, I like the parallel between Tyler cutting porn into kids' movies, but also for, like, one frame, but also having Tyler flash in the picture for one frame all the time in the first half an hour. I like how that parallels. That's very cool.
I mean, that's great because, you know, even though I kind of knew the twist going in, if you don't know the twist, then they're just playing with you because they just told you the twist, kind of. They just told you how they did it. You know what I mean? It's so brilliant. I love the way they break the fourth wall here with later on we see the film sprockets in the side and then we get characters addressing the screen. It's so great.
A big fat dick.
Yeah, because it was like, I love how the voice, the narrator even says, like, you didn't notice that you saw it, but you saw it and you thought about it. And another small thing that I really like about the clues on rewatch, that Tyler and the narrator are the same person, is that it's everything with Marla, because she is the first person to really show you the disconnect. Like, she has no idea what you're talking about a couple times. One of my favorite clues is that there's one scene where Edward Norton's down in the kitchen eating, and there's, you know, the insane sex noises above him with Tyler and Marla. And then there's a phone call. And as soon as he gets up and answers the phone, the sex noises stops. Mm. And I think that's a very interesting thing that I only caught on this time. Like, there's these little clues. And then whenever he's having a conversation with her, obviously she's confused. She doesn't understand. And she is the first big clue to the audience other than the frame flashes and those kind of small things. That I think really work on rewatch to look for them. I think that's fun. Throughout the movie, she is the biggest clue, obviously.
Yeah, I think that Marla is a really interesting character, especially because of the relationship between her and the narrator as, like, the movie progresses. Like, the fact that, I don't know, they never enter into a romantic entanglement that we see throughout the course of the movie. But like they do, we just don't know about it. You know, everything is just completely different than what it seems because of the way that the narrator is viewing things. And honestly, for a lot of the movie, it seems like he just views her as this like annoyance. And he's like, God, like, why does she keep coming around the house? Why are you in my house? Like, how does this keep happening? But you know, like, you feel bad for her at the end.
So do you guys think that Marla is real?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Because
I do know that there's a theory that she's not also.
I was thinking that she wasn't, just because when we see her, at the beginning and she actually, when anytime we see her and she's like walking in the street, all the cars just like magically go around her and she never has to move for anyone and no one ever moves for her. And so I had that idea in my head pretty early on.
It's just because she's Helena Bonham Carter.
She's just great.
No.
Yeah, she's, I don't know.
Magic. Yeah, I felt like they were, because I entered into this movie with a vague knowledge that Tyler and the narrator were the same person. And I felt like they were kind of playing with me and making me think maybe Marla and Tyler were the same person or somehow connected, because later on in the scenes, you know, like, we don't see Marla and Tyler in the same room at the same time. Then we, you know, kind of figure out why in the end. But, like, that kind of led me down that rabbit hole. So I think it was an interesting misdirection. But I do think she is real, because I know you guys talked about, you know, maybe having some problems with Fincher not condemning them enough. I think the narrator here, it just painted as completely pathetic with Marla, because I mean the whole thing is that he can't view Marla as a person. He can only view her as someone to have sex to, which he has to imagine through this other persona of Tyler. And then when he's actually in scenes with her, he literally just cannot express any emotions to her. He's rude to her. He kicks her out. And I think it's a really interesting just criticism of him, and he's just pathetic in those scenes.
I remember what you're talking about with the scene where Edward Norton is there the entire time, and Tyler and Marla keep, you know, one exits as the other leaves, as the other enters. That doesn't really make sense, right? Because I mean, there are other characters who interact with both Tyler and the narrator at the same time. So mm-hmm. Why can't Marla be there at
that? Well, point? I just assumed it was because it's Marla, and that's someone he's having sex with, and that's a much bigger connection than any of the other characters. For him, he has to keep those two things separate, because the whole thing with Marla is he can only imagine his relationship with her in this very sexual, hypersexualized way, where he is this beast of a man, you know, who dominates in bed. But then, so that's why I think he has to keep those two separate, and they can't be in the same room at the same time.
Which apparently he does.
Well, I think the problem with that, and the problem with the relationship between Tyler, the narrator, and Marla, whatever you want to look at it, is that, you mean, obviously, Edward Norton's an incel in this movie. Like, he's representing that kind of thing and that kind of culture. The problem is, the incel wins in the end, and the misogynists win in the end.
But how does he win? How does he win?
He gets the girl!
No! Is that what you interpret the ending? What? The last shot, you mean?
They're holding hands. Yes!
I don't think so at all.
It's a platonic handle.
I think it's very obvious that they are going to be a thing.
Yeah. Really? He's going to die. They're both going to die.
Well, they die, but...
No, they're not.
No, they don't.
Well, he's going to die. No.
The building...
No, they don't die. I know, in the shot they don't die,
but I mean, he has a hole through the side of his cheek, and he just blew up four buildings.
You wouldn't die from that.
Okay, I definitely assumed that the building they were in was blowing up. I think there's like a flash of light right at the end that makes
garage. Yeah.
Their building's blowing up too.
So they're dead.
I've never taken it that way.
I didn't really.
That's what I'm saying with the whole, okay, what did you accomplish? Right? Like, okay, you realize that, and now it's killing yourself. You realize this whole viewpoint, it's not going to work out. It's all a fraud. And he's just going to die in the end. That's why it's such an impactful ending for me. And for me, I don't know. I didn't take the hand-holding at the end to be this sort of, like, romantic culmination of their relationship. I mean, the entire movie, she talks about how much she hates him and how much of a terrible person she is.
Yeah, and I thought that was her giving in to, like, you know what, you're not so bad.
I think the line at the end where he says, "You met me at a very strange time of my life," is fantastic, because it's just, like, a bleak joke. I mean, it's like, it's, I mean, I guess on surface level, it's like, oh, that's funny. Look at that. And now they're together. It was a strange time. But it just played like a classic Fincher nihilistic moment where he's cracking a joke and he's about to die.
See, but there's sequel comics written, I'm assuming, by the same person.
Well, I can't speak to the author. And what
I was talking about that off mic.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm assuming these sequels were written after the movie. So, I mean, I don't think that has too much, the sequels have too much of an effect on the book.
It's also possible that the book has a different ending.
Do you guys, sure. Well, sure.
And what you were saying about the author and his comments on the film, like, yeah, that's stupid.
But didn't he stop the bomb? Didn't he stop the bomb in his building? Wasn't that a whole thing with Tyler?
No. Because he shoots the window and he says, "Don't shoot that. Like the bomb is right here."
I mean, no, he stopped the timer.
Yeah,
in his own building.
The timer.
He pulled the right wire because Tyler was like, "Oh, anything but the green wire." And then he still pulls the green wire and it stops the time. The bomb is still there, so if he shoots it, it's gonna go off.
Okay,
but the
you're
timer
right. You're
is
right.
Done.
He does. Okay.
So I don't think they are dying at the end of the movie.
Do you guys want to know about the books? Because I think that their endings are really interesting.
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
So.
Go
for it. The book, the ending is, of the original book is a little different, where the narrator meets God. And I'm going to read, I'm going to read a little passage for you. And it says, "I've met God across his long walnut desk with his diplomas hanging on the wall behind him. And God asks me, why? Why did I cause so much pain? Didn't I realize that each of us is a sacred, unique snowflake of special, unique specialness? Can I see how we're all manifestations of love? I look at God behind his desk, taking notes on a pad, but God's got this all wrong. We're not special. We are not crap or trash either. We just are. We just are. And what happens just happens. And God says, no, that's not right. Yeah, well, whatever. You can't teach God anything. So, that's something. Also,
that's pretentious as hell.
Yeah. Also, at the beginning of the book, they instead of meeting on a plane, they meet at a nude beach. And I guess in the book, Tyler actually murders someone or people. And the novel ends with the narrator in a mental hospital. So that's...
I think that would have been more effective.
That is
I
the think, first book.
I think if he had actually killed someone, then the narrator would have to deal with that. And instead, he's just like...
If we get a psycho-type ending.
Yeah, and instead, at the end, he's just like, oh my, I was two people.
Goodness. You know? Yeah.
That's
like,
fair.
Wow, okay. I did all this? I organized all these people? I told them to shave their heads? But by the way, not all of them actually shaved their heads, so what the hell was going on with them?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jared Leto doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because it's blonde. I don't know. Yeah, I do think it might be more effective if Tyler actually killed someone. But what we were talking about earlier, you are right, Floyd. He does stop the bomb. Correct. But so maybe he's not going to die in that sense. But I'm saying that like he's fucked. I mean, he went to the police and told the Chile chief everything about the plan, about his involvement with it. And four of those guys
were... Yeah, but the police are going to get killed by Project Mayhem, or at least Project Mayhem's going to stop them.
Well, the police are part of it, also.
Yeah.
Most of the police are in on it. But the one guy, remember the black guy who then steps out of the room and says, we should actually check this out. We should go to the place. I'm assuming that, I mean, that it doesn't turn out...
I don't
out
think he's going to actually get to... No, it just the way the movie is, and especially the nihilism of the movie, I think that scene with the cops going to, you know, cut off the narrator's balls, I think that was it saying like the police aren't going to be any help here. Like they are everywhere. They have taken over. Nothing can stop them.
Also, okay. there's a book 2 and 3 which I don't want to spoil completely, but I will give some quick sentences about. So book 2 this is a spoiler for books 2 and 3 of Fight Club. In book 2, we find out that Tyler can be spread from person to person.
Ew. Nope. All right. Out. I'm done.
That's bad.
A 9-year-old fakes his own death in a house fire, which is also the narrator's son.
Mm-mm.
And then in the third book,
ew.
Marla gives birth to another child, but the father is Tyler Durden, not the narrator. Ooh.
Wait. No, never mind. I'm not reading the sequel.
So it's trying to be like it's trying to be like spooky, like there are actually two people inside this one man,
yeah,
like Jekyll and Hyde, instead of just being like, yeah, this dude has multiple personalities.
What did Marla call him? Dr. Jekyll and
dumb.
Mr. Douchebag.
Mr. Jackass.
Mr. Jackass, that was.
Yeah, Mr. Jackass. Yeah. So again, to get back to that conversation, like there is no consequences. There are no consequences in this movie for what ends up happening. And no one has to really deal with anything other than the fact that the narrator has a hole in his cheek that he's going to go get patched up and he'll have a scar for a while. Like that doesn't kill him. That maybe knocked a tooth out or two, along with the tooth that he already knocked out. So maybe it went right through the tooth hole and it didn't even knock out a tooth and he just has a little hole in his cheek now. Like, there's no consequences, and especially if you read it the way that I did, that Marla... Because Marla says... She says that she like... If I'm remembering the scene correctly, I watched it yesterday. She says, like, oh, you know, I can't actually go away from you or whatever. Like, I need you or whatever. Like, and then they hold hands. I think it's very, with the song playing, I think it's very obvious that they are supposed to be a couple at the end. So in the end, the incel wins. Brad Pitt, yeah, he gets rid of the Brad Pitt character in his mind. But all of the finances of the whole country, of the whole world go away. And everything is good for the space monkeys, and I just feel like because of that, there is no consequences. And again, because Tyler didn't actually hurt anyone, which, you know, it felt like a stupid superhero type trope at this point. Like, oh, don't worry, no one was in those buildings. Like, it just felt so over.
Well,
the,
people
over
were.
The top
Remember,
cliche.
He said that it's security and maintenance people, but I'm freeing them. They're going to be okay because they want to die. So he does kill people.
No, I don't think they were. He was like, oh, there are people there, but it's our people, so they'll know to leave.
Yeah.
That's the way
I took it. Oh, it's their people?
Yeah, no, he said everyone that's there is in on it. So it's their people, so they know to leave.
Okay.
Sick prank, bro.
Then I do agree that I think maybe it might have been more impactful if he would have killed someone. I think that's a fair point. But for me, the ending still works. I mean, it is a... So, sure, he wins. They destroy all the things. Everyone's equal, question mark, I guess. But it's a... What now? I mean, the whole what is the narrator going to do now? The narrator doesn't have Tyler. He destroyed Tyler. He's as pathetic of the man he was in the beginning of the movie. Like,
yeah, but now he wins. Like, he has a girl now, and he's, like, complete or whatever because he did all this, which I feel like is just motivating incel culture, which is the reason that this movie gets held up. I feel like now that I'm talking about it, like, it feels like the ending of this movie, it makes sense now why this movie is held up, because that mindset wins out in the end, and that is said to be a good thing by the
end. Yes, it kills the jerk. It wins, but the consequences that we get for the narrator, like... He's got a hole in the cheek. I take this like this man is gonna die. Like I think the fact that
he's definitely not gonna die.
He blows half his face off. I don't think
he
gets the girl.
He has a little hole right there.
The fact that he doesn't die in the moment when he shoots himself in the head is comical.
Yes, and I think it's classic Fincher nihilism. It is. It's like most of Gone Girl. It's a bleak joke. They win in the end.
Gone Girl's much better.
They blow everything up. Okay, now what? That's what Fincher's saying. Okay, now what? You did all this. Okay, you won in the end, supposedly. And now your entire world's been pulled out from under you. The rug's been pulled out because you're no longer tired. You no longer have this persona for you to act out your toxic masculinity. You are as pathetic of a person in the beginning. You did all this to escape the American capitalism, to escape your pathetic life. And then at the end, he's right back to it. He doesn't win. That's the thing. I don't think this is a victory for them at all.
I think that I kind of agree with Floyd here. I actually kind of wanted to bring something up is another quote that I found was that someone said that if this story had happened today, it would be them turning like incels into like anti-capitalist freedom fighters trying to like destroy.
That's what it felt
destroy
like.
The patriarchy. Because like, I think it's very much.
Well, not fighting the patriarchy because the whole movie is about the patriarchy.
Right.
So the space monkeys wouldn't be fighting the patriarchy.
If it happened today, I think because the idea is that it's like incels versus like mainstream.
Oh, you mean completely changing
right. the story. If they completely changed the story for today. But like, I think that like, I think you're right. You know, like there is this weird air of like, you know, I think there are the fanboys that like it because, let's like we're beating up like dudes in basements. But then there's also the incels that are like, oh, he killed Brad Pitt. Ha ha. He shot him and killed the figment of his imagination. And, oh, he got the girl. Go incels. Like, I think that it does really appeal to that weird mindset of like, I gotta kill the Chad Brad Pitt. And like, I don't know. It's very like cringy Reddit 4chan bullshit. And I think that this ending really drives that home. You know, the more that I think about it. Because honestly, the rest of the movie, I think is a really good example of like anti-consumerism kind of like fighting.
It's a really good movie. That's
I know it's a really good movie at first, but this ending, you know, the more that that I kind of think about it, like this weird incel mindset kind of wins out, and it really pisses me off.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point this time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, because so much of the movie is good. Like, I love this scene when they're stealing the fat. It makes me almost pass out, especially
so
when
gross.
if you've listened to any of these podcasts, you know I'm terrible with gore. And even though that was probably just some like weird concoction of like syrup and like I don't know, fake stuff. In the movie it's fat, and when it catches on that barbed wire just goops out, like just the idea of like liposuction fat, I was like I'm going to pass out. Again, Norton and Pitt have amazing chemistry. Like, there are so many scenes that I think are just so good. And I think that because we're getting so caught up in, like, the ending and the twist, that a lot of the beginning of the movie that is really good, like, the support group scenes, all of them are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Chloe was her name. I could be wrong.
I think
it was Chloe.
I just want to get laid before I die.
that was so sad. That was a human moment that I was like, oh, that's so sad.
That was
it was also great.
That was Fincher nihilism. That was hilarious, but dark as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also what was great about it was that, like, humor. At that time, because he was still dead inside, like, the narrator, he saw it as a joke, which I think, you know, that fit the tone for the beginning of the movie. And I think the reason why this movie just doesn't work in the end, and that I think it's a really good hour and a half of a movie and then a not-so-great last hour, is that it never drives it home once it becomes Project Mayhem. I think all of the commentary of the first hour and a half of, like, look at these stupid men thinking that, like, just going back to... Brad Pitt even says the word hunter-gatherer at some point, which I feel like is correct. Like, it's saying, like, oh, look at these men going back to these base instincts and look at how pathetic they are. I think that works. And again, Edward Norton, Brad Pitt, amazing chemistry. Like, the scene outside the bar when they first fight for the first time, you know, obviously in retrospect, it's just him beating up on himself. But the actual scene itself is so fantastic. And much like Seven, I love the production design of this movie. We haven't really talked about that too much. The set or the house that they're in is amazing.
Yeah,
and I love the montage when he's moving into the house and, you know, they have all these fun antics and, like, him having to turn off the electricity without getting shocked every time it rains and dying in the basement. I think that's these little details. And again, the first hour and a half of this movie is so solid. And again, I love all the clues to that Tyler and the narrator are the same person, but in the end, I think is where it loses it. And I guess it's just a matter of opinion of whether or not you feel like it really hammers it home the way another movie with Jared Leto in it, American Psycho. American Psycho is a very similar film to this, came out a year later. That is, I think, better because it is more direct. It is just Patrick Bateman killing women and, you know, killing a couple men who try to get in his way. And then at the end, he's just, you know, he's just chilling. And you're like, damn, really? That fucking sucks. And you just move on. It's like, that is America. It just chews up and spits people out. I mean, I think the movie is, the movie wouldn't work if there was consequences in the end of American Psycho. Small spoilers for American Psycho, but.
No, I agree with that.
I think that here, yeah, American Psycho, like, if there was consequences at the end, it wouldn't pack the same punch. Yeah. But I think here, when there's no consequences, because of it being two people and never having to, like, just sit with the anti-hero the way that we have to in American Psycho, it just doesn't hammer home the same way. I know I rambled on there, so go ahead and pick out whatever you want to talk
about. Well, I think we're
also
talking about Leto next week with Panic Room, right?
We are.
Are we? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that.
As well as Ian Buchanan from Twin Peaks.
Shit.
Ah, okay. Fantastic.
Nice.
I will say, anyway. in terms of casting... I actually really liked Brad Pitt in this movie. I know I shit on
Me
him
too.
2 weeks ago.
Thank you.
Like, hardcore, I was like, ah, this guy sucks.
Fantastic in both movies.
No, he was bad in Seven. However...
No, he was great in Seven.
I think that he was... I think that his performance really worked in this case. And actually, I think, you know, he may have been the subject of some bad writing in Seven, but at, this,
great
at the same time...
Oh my God.
Ryan, I swear to God... but I think that I think the writing for this movie is actually, in terms of Tyler Durden's character, I think is really interesting. And I think it makes him a very, like, you know, not almost endearing character in some ways. Like, he's kind of a scamp. He pees in soup, you know, he puts porn.
There has to be a charm to Tyler. The movie doesn't work.
Well, exactly. And I think that, like, it starts to lose that towards the end, because we're starting to, like, lock on to this, like, weird message. That kind of gets, like, lost in there and scrambled. But I think for the most part, I really liked Brad Pitt's performance in this movie.
Yeah. And like,
so
I
speaking
said,
of peeing in soup, I was going to ask, did Edward Norton actually, like, work at all those places?
Yes.
And did he
I think
do the
so.
Peeing?
Yeah.
And if so, when he says so. At the one point that Tyler got in trouble for, like, peeing in soup.
Yeah, it was him.
Did the narrator actually just
get
in trouble?
Yeah, anytime something like that happens, it's actually him.
So, like, I got the sense that off camera, Tyler was facing consequences for that. But the narrator never faces consequences for that. It's just yet another example of, like, no consequences because they're not the same character, even though they really are.
Those kind of things don't bother me because they do have to deal with those things. Like, even though we don't see it on screen, like, he has to deal with that. Like, cause he got for peeing in the soup. Like, Tyler, yeah, the narrator did all those things. He was an insomniac, and eventually, instead of sleeping, he created another personality, which is, I think that's what the movie is telling us, what happened. Because it's like, oh, yeah. Tyler got this job as a projectionist, and then he spliced in these movies, and, you know, it's obviously that's actually Edward Norton in the end, you know, who got these jobs as an insomniac to pass the time.
And actually, that leads in really well. To talking about what I think is probably the best part of the movie, which is actually, it's weird that we haven't mentioned it yet, but the fact that there are little blips of just images of Tyler before, you know, in like the first half hour of this movie before Tyler even shows up.
Yeah, for me, I do like the blips in the beginning. I think it ties in well because, you know, the narrator had this job of projectionist, so then he's using that, you know, his job and inserting into his psyche and like that technique of like, you know, showing Tyler in his persona, like that he's like almost trying to tell himself at the beginning of the movie, like, look, you're the same with the person, which is like kind of interesting. For me, honestly, I don't think I needed that though. Like, I don't know if it's a detriment to the film, but I just wouldn't say it's like anything that adds that much. Like, it just feels a little bit too like, oh, look what I did there. You know, like that was just like, that's what I got from it. It felt a little too like, oh, look here, little Easter egg.
Yeah, I get that, but I liked it. I thought it was cool. Yeah, I thought it was an interesting way to give it. It was a fun way to give the audience clues, you know. But yeah, I mean, is there anything else that you guys want to talk about with Fight Club?
Yeah, something we've been talking about all the time with Fincher, the score.
Yeah.
It slaps.
Again, I will be saying this week, I do not think that David Fincher, at this point in his career, knows how to use a score. This one is done by the Dust Brothers, who I don't know. Don't know, couldn't tell you anything else that they scored or, you know, any other type of music that they did. Look, I think the tone certainly works. You know, it's going to be the same thing that I was sort of saying with the other movies. I think the tone works, but there's nothing especially great about this score. You know, What makes movie scores good isn't just the fact that, you know, the music is nice to listen to or the music is cool. You know, you don't like Star Wars just because it sounds good. You like it because of the thematic and motivic connections that are drawn, you know, throughout the entire movie that make it feel like a very cohesive unit. And imagine this for a minute, because I think this would skyrocket my rating of this film. Imagine if in this movie Tyler has some sort of theme or motif. The narrator has some sort of theme or motif. When we learn that they're the same, maybe they're, you know, played together in some sort of way. Maybe the themes fit together very well. Maybe, you know, before the end, we start to hear one kind of bleeding into the other. You know, maybe we get hints that they're the same person before we actually get the reveal that they're the same person.
That'd be cool.
Maybe, you know, they could have done so much with that. And there are so many possibilities. And I think that most directors would have said that they wanted something like that. And I think instead Fincher just said, like, give me some cool, like, electronic, like, dark synthy music. And that's what he got. And, you know, it works fine, but there was so much potential. And so, yeah, that's why, again, the third week in a row, I'm saying Fincher still doesn't know how to use a score.
If you don't say by the time we get to The Social Network that he has a good score, I just think you're never gonna like one of his scores, but
maybe that'll be good. I don't know.
It is good. It's amazing. That score is great. Oh god, it's just so amazing. I really like the score, apart from it just absolutely slapping. I think they could have gone the route with, like, you know, having motifs for different characters. I don't think this movie needs that. I think this movie has enough going on that honestly would have added it, like, just complicated a bit more. We already have like this ridiculously out there pace and storyline that we can't tell where time is. I think it's fitting that the music is kind of all over the place at times. I'm thinking specifically of when his condo blows up and when we cut to like inside, we're going, the camera's traveling behind the refrigerator, we get this really loud, like, 90s garage sounding rock, and then it cuts immediately and it fades away, just you know, whatever other synthy score is happening just kind of jumps back and forth. Fincher's movies, especially these early ones, have always felt like kind of punky, and I think the music here is very 90s, and I think it fits nicely. So I dig it, but.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I just you know, even if you don't like pick up on that, you know, before it gets to the end of the movie, if it, you know, in my version, in the alternate universe where I score this in 1999, 2 years before I was born, then, you know, it's not that you would necessarily notice, you know, that the characters have different themes, but like, there are things that you get subconsciously anyway, and we've talked about this a little bit in some other episodes, but when you have a really good score, you draw those connections subconsciously. And that's just what I didn't get at all with this one.
Yeah, that's fair. I liked the score. I thought it was really good. I also think Logan's idea of like having these two different themes and the way you could play with it sounds awesome. And I think I don't think it really would have been too complicated. I feel like we could have understood it, Matt. I think that would have been just another cool layer to it, in terms of the two identities. But yeah, I think that the score is good here. And again, I'm not trained or educated in that, so I can't say anything other than I like the way it sounds. But yeah, I think the score works here. I do think the score from 7 still stands out a little more in my mind. I mean, the game score does stand out to me because it was just an obnoxious high-pitched piano that just went out through the entire movie. So
we were saying this off mic. We think that score might just be the GameCube startup music, but slowed down.
Yeah, it's not good. It's really not good. And when I'm listening to a score and like, ooh, that's bad. That's not a good sign because I know nothing about music. No, yeah, I think the score is fine here. I think it adds in the moments that it needs to. And I think the sign of a good score is you only notice it when it's good. If like, at least for me, like as a film fan, like if I'm noticing a score when I shouldn't be noticing a score, like if I'm noticing a score when I should be into the scene, just into what's happening in the scene, not listening to it subconsciously, and it's not good music, like it's not adding something to the scene, that's a problem. But I never thought that, like in the game where I just heard that obnoxious high piano. Here, and with most movies, I think that I just hear it subconsciously and that it didn't really stand out, but I think it was good from what I can remember. But yeah, guys, I think we kind of talked. I mean, we already broke the first two rules, so I think we've talked about Fight Club enough. But yeah, guys, final thoughts and ratings on Fight Club.
Yeah. So what to say about this movie? I think that this is a very interesting movie. I think that there are a lot of elements that I really like about it, and I think it has some really interesting messages throughout. I think those messages often get misconstrued and often, you know, maybe from even the source material didn't come from a super great place. I think that the movie can also be interpreted a lot of different ways, which I don't think is maybe the best thing. It is simultaneously a really great thing about it and also a really bad thing about it. You know, I think that this has, like, become a really weird part of our culture, because, like, this movie, you know, it didn't do well at the box office, and then it became, like, a cult classic later on, and it was just kind of, like, it is now this sort of cultural touchstone in that, like, everyone knows the joke, and everyone knows the thing, but, like, why, like, you know, you really have to examine, like, why do so many, like, film bros and, like, incels and, you know, dude bros like this movie? And, like, is it good beyond the bounds of that? And I will say that, yes, I think that despite its problems in the final part of the movie, I think that this still lends itself to being a very good film. And I'm going to give it an A-.
Yeah, I think this is a great movie. I do disagree with most of what Logan and Floyd said about the ending of this movie, about what this movie's trying to say, if the tone gets muddled. I think this film was remarkably ambitious, and I like the way it talks about and it frames the storyline. I think it would have been really easy to end this movie with a blatant, you know, showing directly how evil this person is. This is what this person does. But I think it does it in a much more layered way. I disagree, Floyd. I don't think that the narrator wins in the end. Yes, the Project Mayhem wins in the end. Yes, this creation that he you know made in the end. But where is this going to go? What is going to happen? Obviously, this is not going to help anything. And I think the whole last scene is the narrator realizing that he's really helpless in all this, and that he is exactly in the same position he was when he started out, which is he is frail and pathetic, and that he doesn't have Tyler anymore. And that was the only way that he could. that was the man that he envisioned he wanted to be. That was how that's how he wanted to be acting around women, and that's how he wanted to rule the world. But he can't because he's pathetic. And I think that's a great conclusion to the movie, and I think it perfectly culminates what Fincher was trying to say the entire movie. Apart from that, I think all the performances are great. I think this entire movie, these people are painted as pathetic, but I think it also does a really good job of bringing us into this idea. I mean, the idea of a fight club of people punching each other on the street is really ridiculous, and I think Fincher realizes that and makes us realize that. But at the same time, it's also interesting to watch because Brad Pitt is a really engrossing character, and he's a really, really great actor in this movie. I think they do a good job then at the end of making him more and more nefarious. Although I will give you that I think it might have worked a bit better if he would have killed somebody. Maybe that would have made the stakes a little bit higher for the narrator's character. But by and large, I think this is a great movie. I think, yeah, it can definitely be misconstrued if you read it surface level or if you interpret the ending differently. And it's a shame that people do. And I can't speak to the novel. I mean, I haven't read it. From what you were saying about the author and the excerpts you were reading, kind of seemed like shit. But what I can speak to is the film, and I think Fincher did a really good job at adapting it. The cinematography is amazing. Pace is amazing. Once again, I think this is definitely an A movie. I think it's better than Seven for sure.
Yeah, I think it's sad that the really iconic parts of this, you know, the reasons that people like it, are the parts that display toxic masculinity and not really the parts that condemn it. I'm disappointed. I really wanted to like this movie. It's very nihilistic and dark, which I can definitely appreciate. But I just feel like it has no heart to it. It feels like a very soulless movie where there's nothing that especially draws me in or makes me care a whole lot. The twist is well done, but to me the film before that is not especially engaging, so the twist is kind of, you know, it's like the chocolate sauce on top of a turd sundae. Like, okay, great. I'm glad it has chocolate sauce. But, yeah, and I think that the themes just sort of get really muddled towards the end. Like, it's trying to say that, you know, consumerism is bad, and consumerism is leading to sort of the demasculization of American men. And then they take down consumerism, and it's like, it's a weird kind of like meninist like hurrah here, and it's very, very strange like men's rights kind of message that I feel is trying to be portrayed, and maybe it's not, but it just feels like, you know, the opposite of that isn't being condemned, or like, yeah, that sort of men's rights perspective isn't being condemned hard enough, I feel like, for it to be very effective. That said, I think it's very technically well made. Like, David Fincher is good at putting together movies. I think mostly I just don't like what he puts together. And I think that Pitt, Norton, and Carter all have really great performances. I for the first time in my life, I like Brad Pitt. I think Brad Pitt gives a genuinely good performance. And yeah, I think I'm going to go B- for this one.
Yeah, so this was one of my favorite movies. You know, this was probably in my top 100, 150 all time before this viewing. And I gotta say, it's not there anymore. I had a lot more problems with it this viewing than I did before. I do still think it's a good movie. I do still like this movie. I think the first hour and a half of this movie are very good. And I think the first hour and a half is doing all the things that the movie is trying to do in terms of being a critique of toxic masculinity and incel culture and those kind of things, even before incel was a word. It was still a thing and an idea. I think, like everyone else has said, Brad Pitt is fantastic in this movie. He is, I say about Armie Hammer in The Social Network, that is the role he was born to play, and I think this is kind of like the role that Brad Pitt was born to play. I think he's just as good as he was in Seven, if not a little better in this movie, and yeah, Edward Norton is fantastic. Helena Bonham Carter is fantastic. Everyone else in the cast is very good, even Jared Leto in his little performance when he was on screen. I think that this movie works in terms of giving you clues on repeat viewing to keep you engaged. You see more clues towards the twist. I think the twist works within the context of the movie. I just don't think that in the end the movie follows through on the on the condemnation and everything it needed to really hammer home the first hour and a half of this movie. And I think the tipping point for me is as soon as Project Mayhem starts, this movie starts to lose me. And I do. I mean, as you listen through this podcast, you know that I have problems with this movie. So in the end, I still think it's a good movie. I think there's a lot of really good things about it. I think Fincher's style is here in full. Definitely for me, this movie is nowhere near as good as Seven. As I said, Seven's a perfect movie for me. Or, you know, closest thing to it. But, you know, it doesn't quite work as well for me as Seven. Still a decent movie. Definitely better than The Game and Alien 3 for me. But, yeah, for me, I'm going to also go with a B- here. I think it's a good movie. You know what? I said B-. I'm going to give it a B. I think a B is the right grade for me for Fight Club. Many things I love. Fincher's direction, I think, is fantastic here. It does a really great job. I still love David Fincher, even though I've soured on his early filmography, minus Seven, which I still love the same way I did the first time. But next week, we got Panic Room, another big movie that I have not seen of his. So I'm very excited to be talking about that. I know that Jodie Foster is in it. So that'll be fun to talk about. And then after that, we have a very big film. I know for Matt, we got Zodiac in 2 weeks, which is a film that I really like as well. So, so that's what's going to be coming up on the feed for us. But one of you gentlemen want to talk about the other podcasts on our network?
Yes. This is, of course, our flagship show, the Cinema Talk Podcast. But we also have the CTP Movie Journal, Matt and Ryan's miscellaneous short-form movie podcast featuring the best of lists. Stop, Wait, What?, our improv comedy advice show. Back in Style, our newcomer-friendly episodic review of Twin Peaks. Twisted Mug Mysteries, your one-stop shop for everything spooky and occult. Octo Island, our extended universe Star Wars podcast. And I Might Play That, our all-new video game review podcast.
Yes, and we are also on social media. You know the drill. We are at Twisted Mug Media on Instagram and Twitter. Please go hit us up there. Give us a follow. And if you'd like to contact us via email, you can do so at twistedmugmedia@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys. You know, are you a fan of Fincher's works? Are you a fan of this movie? Who do you side with? Me, Floyd, or Logan? Are you in the middle like Brendan? Let us know. We'd love to hear.
And we also have a YouTube channel. You can check us out at the Twisted Mug Media Network on YouTube. We have a couple videos up. Ryan, do you have one or two Criterion Hall videos up now?
I have one video up. Actually, by the time this goes out, my second video will be up. Yeah.
Great. So we have Ryan's two Criterion Hall videos up, which are very, very cool if you're into that kind of thing. You can check us out there. Remember to like, favorite, subscribe, retweet, reblog, tickle my balls. You know, whatever you want to do. But we appreciate the support.
So we will be back next week with a review of Panic Room, and be sure to check out the feed all week for our other shows. So thanks for listening, guys. I'm Ryan.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Logan.
And we'll talk to you next time.
I'm Tyler
Durden.
See you guys. Brad Pitt.
Tits.